Good morning.
Good morning.
Today's readings for Epiphany Sunday are all about light. In the first reading, the Hebrew people have been in exile for two generations, and Isaiah offers a word of hope that they will soon be returning home. A new king of Persia, and he will be light to them. In turn, they will return home and be light to the world around them. Reading from Isaiah 60, verses 1 to 6. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the peoples. But the Lord will arise upon you, and his glory will appear over you. Nations shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn. Lift up your eyes and look around. They all gather together. They come to you. Your sons shall come from far away, and your daughters shall be carried on their nurses' arms. Then you shall see and be radiant. Your heart shall thrill and rejoice, because the abundance of the sea shall be brought to you. The wealth of the nations shall come to you. A multitude of camels shall cover you, the young camels of Midian and Ephah. All those from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and frankincense, and shall proclaim the praise of the Lord. In our gospel reading, the Magi, the stargazers, ever attuned to the lights in the sky, follow a star and make their way to the one who would become the light of the world. Chapter 2, verses 1 to 12. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born king of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet. And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage." When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Will you join me in prayer? Holy light, illumine our lives. You have been with your people as love and light, as mystery and healing, since the dawn of time. Be with your people now and open for us a way through our life, through this world, with your light-filled gospel. Amen. Well, I went on a bit of an internet search in preparation for this sermon. Bet you had no idea that this year, 2015, will be rich in opportunities for new projects in areas of my life. Apparently the planet Jupiter will help me set up new ambition or effort in my life during this time period. This is an apt time to take wise decisions regarding my future course of actions in life, be it personal or professional. Thought you should know that. The planetary positions will help me to keep a check on my
emotional imbalances. Did you know that I had emotional imbalances? You did. This year is a good time to bury my past grouses and work towards a brighter future. If I am in an artistic field, am I in an artistic field?
Absolutely. Wait,
okay, yeah. Just checking. Then this is an ideal time to showcase my works to the world. Huh? Fame and name are waiting for me. It's great. Not the emotional imbalances part, but listen to that. So, there we are. 2015 is going to go that way for me. Okay? Just thought you should know ahead of time. And you may be thinking, what the heck? We have reached a new low when sermon preparation includes searching the horoscopes. Right? The preacher's lost his mind. What possibly could the astrological charts have to do with the gospel this morning? Well, I'm just taking my lead from the scriptures. That's all. Matthew's version of the birth of Jesus has astrologers, stargazers, consulting their charts, reading the skies, and following the stars, figuring out what they mean for what's going on here, and following it. These wise guys looked at their books, didn't check the internet, but they checked the alignment of Jupiter, I'm sure of it, and they predicted that a child would be born to the Hebrew nation, and that he would be great. And they were wise enough to figure out that he would also cause a bit of a stir in the ruling family, because he was considered to be some kind of royalty himself. And so they didn't tell Herod where to find him. If you continue to read, what you discover is that Herod is a bit of a maniac. And when he discovers that they didn't tell him and that he doesn't know, but that there's an important child under the age of 2 in his kingdom, he goes on a rampage, a genocide, killing children. And Joseph and Mary and Jesus have to flee to Egypt. That's how the story goes. You see, these particular astrologers stirred up more than predictions of a baby. They stirred up the fears and hang-ups of Herod. They stirred up a political hornet's nest that ended in an attempted genocide. One of the major themes of Matthew's account of the birth story of the birth of Jesus is that this particular birth threatens the powers. Not only was it lovely and warm, not only did it fulfill the yearnings of the people and fulfill the requirements of the scriptures, but it also gave those in power the heebie-jeebies. And often the way that the story is told in our churches and in certainly the public arena, a lot of that part of the story, a lot of the conflict part is glossed over. We hear the stable and the shepherds abiding and the angel choir singing Gloria. And we think of baby Jesus, the sweet love of God, God's gift of love to the world, so warm and so tender. How can such a warm gift of love be as threatening as Matthew plays it out to be? Love? Threatening? How does that work? Actually, one clue to how that works can be found if you talk to the father of the Nobel Peace Prize winning Malala Yousafzai. Most of you likely have heard Malala's story. Are you familiar with Malala's story? Let me know how many of you, how much of the background I need to fill in here.
most of you, Malala, 15 years old, speaking in Pakistan, speaking for girl child education, shot by the Taliban, taken to England, restored to health, continued to speak in the face of that kind of threat. That's Malala's story. Her father was interviewed this last year and talked about seeing the activist growing in this little girl and loving her enough to encourage that prophetic voice, even though he knew by personal experience himself as an activist and educator that her voice would be threatening. Apparently, in some circles in Pakistan, loving your daughter enough to let her find her voice threatens the rules that govern the role of women. You see, love in itself is not threatening. But love can be a little unpredictable. And if you're interested in control, it can be threatening. Love can open minds. It can transcend differences. And we've seen in our society how love between women or love between men can be threatening because it transcends the way society has traditionally looked at family, marriage, relationships, kinds of things. I mean, a huge part of what happened in South Africa to overthrow apartheid was about loving your neighbor. A lot of the relationships between key leaders, between key people, they put their faith in the love of each other rather than letting the threats overwhelm it. We have seen where racial differences are used to construct systems and how love of a new future threatens that whole system. We have seen even in our own community here in Surrey, how love which crosses faith or racial lines can be threatening when for some, keeping those lines clear and distinct is of utmost importance. Interracial marriages, interreligious marriages in Surrey can cause conflict, can be threatening. Well, I believe that the love that is born at Christmas messes with the lines, all the lines, messes with the way our little world can be so carefully constructed and buttressed, and that can be threatening. But I believe that it is in the very nature of God to mess with those lines, to mess with the categories that we just adopt and that we create to hold our life together by holding other lives separate. Some years ago, in the heat of conflict between the logging industry and environmentalists, I took a trip out west to the west side of Vancouver Island to Long Beach. It's going to be a lovely holiday. It's during the summer. And as you drive west, you come over the mountains through Cathedral Grove and all that, and it starts to flatten out as you're starting to approach Long Beach. And you get to a fork in the road. You get to a T intersection. And if you turn left, you go to the, at that time,
primarily forest industry town of Yucluwit. And if you turn right, you go to, at that time, primarily environmentalist Tofino. And somebody had written on the barrier that makes sure you don't go into the water, right across the barrier, an arrow. That way, taxpayers. That way, welfare bums. Right on the barrier. Yeah. There's a divide for you. The expression of a divide. Which the love born at Christmas is destined to mess with. It occurred to me, wouldn't it be interesting as a United Church minister to serve a 2-point United Church pastoral charge of Tofino Yucluwit? Wouldn't that be cool?
No, you can't.
Wouldn't that be good work? Wouldn't it be great to work with God on that one? Mess with those categories. What divides are you grappling with in your life right now? That's my question for you. What barriers is love just itching to chip away at in your life? You see, I believe that love calls us to develop cross-border relationships. Christians ought to be notorious for crossing lines that separate people. We ought to have a reputation for that. Sure, it gets you up to your neck in politics when, for the love of God, the teacher shows up at the officer of the Minister of Education and says, "Let's talk." Or when the Christian concerned about climate change shows up at the head office of Enbridge and says, "I want to have a conversation with you." It may well get us up to our neck in politics when, for the love of God, we invite Elizabeth Fry Society to join us on a possible project on this very site, because it might just mess with maybe even some of ours, but certainly maybe some of our neighbors' sense of just who are the people in your neighborhood. God got up to the Almighty neck in politics right off the bat in the life of Jesus. And we're going to see that in the scriptures that are coming in the next number of weeks. Herod went ballistic. And we are followers of that love that messes with the categories. And so, we ought to be notorious fence jumpers and bridge builders. Because that's what an all-embracing love does. So my question to leave you with today, I always think that a sermon is never finished when I'm done. Just so you know. I mean, I put some work into it ahead of time, and you think that the sermon preparation is the sermon. It's not. And I actually write it and publish it out there, and you think that the actual written document is the sermon, but it's not. And then we put it on the internet, and it's a spoken thing and a written thing on the internet, and you think that's done, and it's not. And I speak it from here, and I think, okay, I've done that sermon. No, it's not done, because it needs to be alive and continue to live. And so to leave a sermon with a question is just to nod your head to the activity of God beyond what I've done. So here's your question. As we gather around this table of grace on the first Sunday of a new year,
This question has nothing to do with the predictions of what's going to happen. It has everything to do with the commitments that we bring to life. What boundaries, borders, barriers that separate people one from another will you or will we be called to cross this year? As we seek to live out the love that has been given to us. Because the love's been given to us, and it is a very particular love. It calls us to jump the fences and cross the borders. So what borders and fences and barriers are we going to jump because of our commitment to that love this year? Which barriers will we feel called to dismantle this year, for the love of God?